Yeah, there's counts. Girls, you throw your rod on three.
Three.
Four. You grab your hand. Five, sorry. You grab your foot. No toe point. Yep, go do it.
This is calisthenics. Yes, it's still around. There's loads of bendy girls who do it. And it's an Australian creation with an interesting history. Hello, I'm Amanda Smith. And on RN, this is The Body Sphere. Also coming up, you're going to meet four sisters who are competing together in the softball at the Australian Masters Games next month.
I think that our sport has kept us closer in our later years now. We all have our own families, but we have this time. We know that we're going to come back together and relive our childhood.
And more from the four softball sisters later here in The Body Sphere. Now, something that you discover pretty quickly about calisthenics is that it's most definitely a female family affair.
Come on, girls, let's go!
My name's Catherine Andrews. I started when I was 3 years old because when my mother was younger, she did calisthenics as well, and so did my grandma.
So you didn't have a choice?
I had no choice.
Hi, I'm Lauren Blakely, and I am 19. Well, my older sister did it, and my twin and myself started when we were two turning three, because we just saw her in pretty costumes and we wanted to do it too, I guess.
I'm Jacqueline Munro and I started in 1996, so I was 3 years old, and my mum took me to my local calisthenics club that my sister joined the year before.
I'm Emily Keane and I started when I was five, and I was introduced by my auntie who had done it when she was young, and it just flowed throughout our family. My sister did it as well.
I'm Maddie Smith. Well, I was 3 years old when I started, and I think my mum just thought I had way too much energy, so she decided I needed to be doing something, so she put me into calisthenics classes.
10, 5, 6, and we go. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, so straight up, we've all just gone bang, and that tells me that you've got so much weight going down towards the floor. Lift up out of your hips, okay?
Calisthenics, it's such a variety. So I've done jazz, I've done ballet throughout my life, I've done nearly every type of dance that you can think of, but calisthenics is everything just combined in one. You get to do it all at once.
I'd say it's got different elements of dance, gymnastics, ballet, musical theatre, but it's great for learning confidence, discipline, as well as all physical skills that you learn.
Arms in, shoulders back, ribs in, bottoms under. Five.
We have to have a lot of strength, especially core strength, because we do a lot of balance work and stuff like that. We also have to have a lot of flexibility for walkovers and splits and leg mounts, stuff
and
like that.
Go. 1, 2, 3, 4. Stop, stop, Christina, you're out.
Basically, everything, every move has to be on a certain count and everything has to be perfectly together. We have to be standing in perfectly straight lines. Like, everything's really has to be perfected and everything's got to be right.
4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Stop, when's the head back?
7.
Didn't see that. It's just 7, 8.
Well, I think it's the competitive nature of it is what makes it really a sport, but also the things we have to do with our bodies, and we really have to push ourselves and we really have to be athletic.
I really love being part of a team, and I've always, like, I liked netball and all other sports, but it's not the same. Like, you can miss a week of netball and you can miss a week of basketball and all other sports, but when you tell people, oh, I've got a comp, and, you know, they're like, oh, do you want to come to the party? I'm like, I can't miss this. Like, you're so involved with the team, you can't miss comp.
Yeah, I call it a way of life more so than anything, because, you know, it's just the way that we live. We're so committed and, you know, we love our sport.
You know, you're so fit and flexible and strong. What will you do to keep that up after you have to stop calisthenics?
Well, I haven't really thought about stopping calisthenics yet. Well, even my mum, she's still doing it as a master. Not quite what we're doing, but she's still doing it for fitness.
So there's a master's category?
There is. I'm a little bit embarrassed. I love going to her comps. I'm very proud of her. And I get nervous for her as well. But yeah, it's fun to watch.
So these are all the mums?
Yes. The age is, I think, 26 and over, but when mum first started a few years ago, the average age was way over 40, so it was very entertaining.
Four, better. 6, 7, 8. Keep it going. 3, 4, 5, 6. Ah, stop. See that? 1, 2, 3, 4. Bang, 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 bang. Big zigzag line, okay? You're turning your head.
Members of the senior girls' state team from Victoria and their coaches practicing for the National Calisthenics Championships. Wait till they're 40.
Well, now, like Australian rules football, calisthenics is an all-Australian sport. Whereas Australian football traditionally embodies masculine qualities, in calisthenics, the highest accolade you can get as a competitor is to be named Most Graceful Girl. And as we've heard, it has elements of gymnastics and dance to it, and to my eye, it looks kind of like synchronised swimming, but on land. Roslyn Otson is the author of Grace and Strength, A History of Calisthenics in Australia. And Ros, before we get into the history of this sport, what's your own history in it?
It's 63 years long because I started when I was three in my mother's, the class that she played for in a local church hall.
Played, she played.
Played the piano. Yeah. I was there at the back of the tinies class at three, and I didn't retire until well after 40.
Well, now, calisthenics comes out of, as I understand it, the 19th century physical culture movement and German and Swedish gymnastics. How do these things blend and develop in Australia to produce calisthenics?
It all goes back to the gold rush, because the gold rush brought people from all of the physical culture streams, and they produce a sort of amalgam of all the styles. The boys stuck with the acrobatics and the use of fixed apparatus, such as rings and vaulting horses and all that sort of thing. The girls, it was not quite considered the thing for girls. And so they ended up with the calisthenics side of gymnastics, which was free exercises or exercises with anything you could hold in your hand, but no fixed apparatus.
Oh, okay. So that's the difference. Yes. Yeah. Gotcha.
And it has become a female culture. It's a strong female culture. Calisthenics means grace and strength. And those twin qualities are evident in every form of exercise that the girls are trained in.
Well, in Europe, those gymnastics movements develop into a kind of way of regulating bodies, I suppose. I mean, if you think of the mass gymnastics displays into the 20th century with both fascist and communist countries, you know, those monumental displays of highly ordered bodies looking the same, doing the same thing, and that carry a kind of ideological message about power and discipline and conformity. How is calisthenics similar or different to that?
The physiological aspects of calisthenics were particularly caught by the Swedish gymnast Ling, and that is the method that became dominant and certainly became part of school physical education. But the German method was more for mass displays. The German gymnastics grew up in the Turnverein, which were German community clubs. And so the Germans were practicing mass displays from the 1860s. For Ling, the Swedish method, he was interested in the physiological perfection of your body, looking after your body as a very precious thing. The Germans, again, had that same notion, but they were looking more to the notion of the perfection, which then goes into race perfection. And so what you see in the Hitler gatherings, the massive displays of youth, were typical of Germany. And they were typical in Australia as well. There are many accounts of massed get-togethers on ovals, particularly if we had visiting guests, the Prince of Wales, dukes, duchesses and worthies, the American fleet. Thousands of schoolchildren were rallied, put on ovals and did drill. They might have done some maypole dancing. They might have swung their Indian clubs. They marched. Anybody who was a member of a school sports team or a house sports team up into the 1970s, would probably have done marching in step rhythmically and look good. Now, this is just a straight descendant of calisthenics and physical culture.
I guess I'm also asking, though, is there a kind of ideological difference?
There certainly is. It takes on a particular Australian tang very early, and it is to do with the Australian girl. There was a quite advanced idea that the Australian girl was a better sort of girl physically and emotionally than the girl from the old world.
Well, in the various
disciplines that you compete in calisthenics, there is still, in a way, a vestige of, well, you talked about marching. So there is a kind of vestige of that sort of military discipline in that, the figure marching. There's also the sort of strict precision involved in the rod exercises and the club swinging. The, you know, Indian clubs were very popular in Victorian times. So while I guess these days there's a very theatrical overlay to calisthenics competitions, isn't there, with music and costumes, loads of sequins and makeup and so on. There's still this basis in the kind of a more 19th century ideology around physical culture.
There certainly is. And Australian calisthenics is the only true remnant of the great physical culture ideals of the 19th century. Indian club swinging is not swung anywhere else in the world with the complexity and the use of the variety of swings that you find in Australian calisthenics. The sort of club swinging that happens in the rhythmic gymnastics exercises is a faint shadow.
Right, in the Olympic Games.
In the Olympic Games, a faint shadow of the original Indian club swinging.
Now, there's also a thread, I think, of muscular Christianity in calisthenics, isn't there? In that, you know, certainly for many decades through the 20th century, calisthenics clubs were church clubs.
Exactly so. And in fact, if it were not for the churches, calisthenics would not exist today. You need a hall to do your calisthenics exercises in. And most communities didn't have a hall, but the Sunday school movement required churches to build an adjacent hall for the Sunday school classes. This advantaged the girls because they didn't have fixed apparata, which had to be moved all the time in order to accommodate the Sunday school. It was also, there wasn't much else available for girls physically, certainly not in the early 20th century. Some clubs even provided the uniform and the rod and the clubs. So it was a wonderful way for girls to get together and exercise together. Churches thought it was good too, from the muscular Christianity point of view, that you were looking after your body, which is after all the temple of God, and you were not getting into mischief, and you were trying for an ideal of elegance and beauty and mastery, which was good for all people. So without the churches, we would not have calisthenics still today.
Well, now, in Australian football, Roz, there's an imaginary line that runs through Australia that's known as the Barassi line, and it notionally divides the country into traditional rugby league territory and traditional Aussie rules territory. Is calisthenics in any way similar in that it's geographically specific within Australia?
It certainly is, and the Barassi line is also the Hopton line, if I can use the name of a great calisthenics leader.
Okay.
It is the same line.
So what do they do in New South Wales and Queensland?
In New South Wales, Christian Bjelke-Petersen, who began his career in Hobart with physical culture, moved to Sydney and set up his own physical culture institute, and the Bjelke-Petersen physical culture classes still abound in New South Wales, but they had evolved and were evolving away from
a different
what was
code.
Happening. Yes. There's a huge calisthenic movement in Canberra and the same in Queensland.
Yes, well, I was going to say, I mean, Bjelke-Petersen is a name we associate with Queensland, so
yes.
That style of physical culture is the go there too?
No, because that Bjelke-Petersen, Joe Bjelke-Petersen, is a distant cousin of the...
They're Danish.
That's right. In Queensland, the general calisthenics that the southern states have developed with Northern Territory is now very strong in Queensland. The physical culture of New South Wales, not so much.
Now, you've mentioned the Gold Rush, and the major annual competition for calisthenics has always been the Eisteddfod in Ballarat, the Gold Rush town in Victoria, the South Street comps. That's where you can win Most Graceful Girl. How important has the South Street competition been over the years for calisthenics?
Like the church halls, South Street is that other absolutely essential ingredient because they provided a competition of such lustre that everybody wanted to be part of it.
everybody around the country.
In the calisthenics world. And it was the locus of the developing Australianness of physical culture. What people saw at Ballarat was what they took back to their own classes and taught their girls.
Where the sort of more theatrical look?
Exactly. They had a theatrical review in by about 1909. And then they introduced aesthetic exercises, which was originally called plastic, because in the early 1920s, the eurythmic movement was sweeping the world. Isadora Duncan had allegedly recreated ancient Greek dance by reading the friezes on vases and looking at how the bodies were placed from that, creating flowing movement. Now, this was supplanting physical culture, the old militaristic drill-style physical culture elsewhere in the world, and eventually swept it away pretty well. But in Australia, teachers started to incorporate softer movements, eurythmic movements, into the sharp free exercises, and there was a sort of crisis. What do we do here? Do we allow this or don't we? And Ballarat solved the problem by creating a special section for free exercises done with soft movements, which they called plastic exercises, and the original free exercises. Now, plastic has evolved really now into a sort of balletic item without ballet shoes, but a flowing, soft form of dance, really.
And when does calisthenics at Ballarat at the South Street Comps date back to?
1903, the first competition, 1903, and then it grew from there.
Okay. And three. Okay, if you do this in aesthetics, we lose 10 points, okay? Which means we come last. Go back. And we go. And one. And two. And three. And knees out, four. Running, 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 running. Glide, glide, glide. Arms up. Back, girls. Who are you taking your arms up with?
And 110 years after it started, the Royal South Street competitions are on next month in Ballarat in Victoria. Roslyn Otson is the author of Grace and Strength, Calisthenics in Australia. You're listening to The Body Sphere on air and online at RN. Amanda Smith with you. Also taking place next month are the Australian Masters Games. Across the country, thousands of competitors are getting out on ovals, courts, tracks, pools, getting into shape for their event at the Masters Games, including these four softball players.
All right. Good hit, Andy.
Yeah. Good hit, Andy. It's your cue to play court.
Chuck Hess.
Don't give me cheeks, so you'll get too big.
Yeah,
we just did like this, didn't we?
Okay,
we don't need to have the net, probably.
Lee Marsh, 53. Andy Wanky, 50.
Kerry Vincent, 48.
Danny Wilson, 48.
Okay, so the four of you comprise part of a softball team competing in the Australian Masters Games next month. You can't tell from your surnames, but you are all sisters, and Danny and Kerry, you're twins. So have you all been playing softball since you were kids?
Yep, Lee started us off, but all of us have been playing since we were 8 or 9 or 10.
Why softball?
We're all playing the same sport because Mum said to us, pick a sport that you can all see yourselves playing because I'm only going to drive to one spot. But I actually initially picked softball because I was interested in playing cricket, and I used to follow my dad around to the cricket games and things like that, learn how to score. But we didn't have a local women's team that didn't have to wear skirts. So I picked softball because our next door neighbour was involved with a softball club.
And there are actually two more sisters. There are six of you, and they played as well?
Yep, they both did play in their younger years, and we actually roped Sam back in 12 months ago to play. So we had five of us on the diamond at once. It was great.
Any chance of getting the other two back this time around?
Sam, maybe we might be able to. Megan, not a chance. I think Sam enjoyed it, but I don't think she enjoyed it as much as we did.
Now, look, I haven't played softball since I was at school, I have to admit to you. So Remind me, and anyone else who is a little bit hazy, what happens. It's essentially baseball for girls, isn't it, with a bigger ball that's not actually that soft at all, is it?
No, it's not. And it's not overarm pitching, it's underarm pitching, which I think is probably more difficult. The diamond's a little bit smaller, but essentially, yeah, it's very similar to baseball.
So why is it called softball if the ball isn't soft?
There is nothing soft about softball, I can tell you. When you get hit with a softball, yeah, no. I don't know why it's called softball. Don't know.
A man probably called it softball.
Yeah.
So tell me, are there strategic benefits to being four sisters playing in the one team?
Yeah, I think there is. I think we all know how each other play. We each know what everyone's thinking. Lee and Danny are pitcher-catcher, so there's that mental telepathy between them in terms of how they're going to pitch the ball, how Lee's going to call it, where the play's going to be.
You must have a good sense of each other's strengths and weaknesses.
Oh, yeah, absolutely we do. I mean, Andy plays first base and Kerry plays shortstop, so wherever Lee calls it on the diamond, you know, the team can see where the ball's going to be more likely to be hit.
So, Lee, what's it done, do you reckon, for your relationships as sisters to have this shared sport that you play?
I think it reinforces how well we get along together. You know, we're on the diamond, and like Kerry said, we know what the other one is thinking, and it is a fantastic fallback when you're having a bad game to have your sisters there to say, hey mate, don't worry about it, you know, sun's coming up tomorrow. It doesn't even have to be spoken sometimes. It's just, you know, they'll come and sit next to you on the bench, or, you know, after the game, let's have a drink, guys, and we'll have an autopsy about the game. So yeah, just that, that's fantastic.
We are very close, we always have been, and it's just great when we have these tournaments just to get together. I mean, we're away for 10 days and it really, we've all got different families, we all live different areas, so it makes it just time for all of us, for us as a family, as well as having a sport to play that we absolutely enjoy.
So how do the other team members find it, having four sisters who, you know, as you're saying, you do all have a special relationship with each other? How is it for the rest of the team?
We are also close as a team as well. We do have our last night ritual as sisters. They know, and they just say, it's sister time, don't go anywhere near them. They close the bedroom door, we all hop on the bed together and we just chat, and we just, that's our time when it's our last night of the tournament. We don't realise how lucky we are because they tell us all the time. We just think, well, we did grow up thinking every family was like this, but we realise now, very lucky to have the relationship we do have.
Mind you, it does occur to me that the thing you said, Lee, that your mother said, you know, you're all playing one sport, I'm not driving you all to different sports. That wouldn't happen now, I don't think. That'd almost be a sort of a denial of children's rights or something, don't you think?
Absolutely, you're exactly right. Yeah, our poor mum's been out to be the ogre, but we're thankful she did it because I think that our sport has kept us closer in our later years now. As Kerry said, we all have our own families, but we have this time. We know that we're going to come back together and relive our childhood again, like being in the bedroom on the bed, chatting away like we were young girls. So you're right, though. Now, if our children said, I was guilty, my child wanted to try this, she tried gymnastics, she tried softball, I did it all with her. I drove her to all those different places. But, yeah, our mum doesn't look
sheer
that
way of numbers, really. You yes. know, when you're trying to transport around six children, we only have to do two and three.
So how is it on your body these days?
Mine's okay, actually. I don't have any aches or pains. Back in 2008, I think I broke my back playing softball.
But you don't have any aches and pains?
No, actually, no. I'm lucky, touch wood, that it healed pretty well.
Yeah, a few aches and pains. I find probably more than anything is the fact that, you know, what you could do when you were 25, you try and do now, and it's, you just haven't got those same reflexes. You know, a bit of stiffness, but other than that, still worth it.
And I'm lucky. I'm the oldest, but I think I'm the least injury-prone out of all of us. I'm the person that bounces. But, yeah, just recovery time, I guess, on tournaments when you're playing two and three games a day, you notice the recovery time. But other than that, yeah, normal aches and pains of, you know, being over 50.
Well, I'm the injury-prone one. I'm the surgery girl. If there's going to be an injury to happen, everyone else will get away with a bruise, but I'll have to have surgery in the end. But anyway, I still keep going back.
You take it for the team, do you?
Take it for the team. That's me, taking it for the team. I'm good like that. Although I'm getting rid of the crutches of doom because I'm not storing them under my staircase anymore because I think that's why it's happening to me.
Are any of your kids, your daughters, now playing softball?
Yeah, I've got a daughter who plays softball, yep, and she's better than me because she's made a state level, so I would be thinking that when she's 50 she'll still be playing as well.
Well, she might be able to join you at some stage. Wow. And make it multi-generational.
We have done that. We have played with our daughters in Saturday teams. Lee's got two daughters.
And they play, Lee?
Yes, they both play. The younger one has made, also better than me, made a state team, and I hope they're playing when they're 50.
Now, there's a vote coming up very soon on whether softball gets readmitted into the Olympic Games, isn't there? It was on the program for a few years, from Atlanta in 1996 through Beijing, to mm-hmm. Beijing in 2008, and then got dropped. Is this why you're still all playing together? You're actually hoping for Olympic team selection?
I think the only selection we'll be getting would be in the cheer squad.
I think we've missed the boat on that one. But however, I mean, it is a passion for us as well. I am passionate about wanting it to be back. I think it's a sport that should be included in the Olympics. So, yes, we're hoping it gets back.
Well, Lee, Andrea, Danny and Kerry, it's been a great pleasure to meet the four of you sisters, and good luck in the Australian Masters Games with the softball.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And there's a link to the Australian Masters Games and also to the Australian Calisthenic Federation for the young and not so young on the Bodysphere website. That's where you can also download or stream this program and post a comment if you'd like to. abc.net.au/radionational. I'm Amanda Smith.